Coming up on this edition of the Golf Digest podcast, we give some final U.S. Open thoughts on the eve of the tournament, and we have a chat with Sergio Garcia.
My God, my swing feels like an unfolding lawn chair.
Well, why do they even have one if you're not supposed to hit it there?
Because it's fun! We're having fun!
What is this, custom? Mine's off the rack.
I wish Tiger Woods was here to help me with this.
We'll do it live!
Welcome back to the Golf Digest podcast. I'm Alex Myers, and I'm joined by Sam Wyman, Ryan Harrington, and Chris Powers. We are coming to you from the media center at Shinnecock Hills. Guys, what are your impressions of this lovely course so far?
Well, I love the ambient noise we're hearing right now from the USGA media officials. More. The other ambient noise we were hearing a moment ago was rain pelting on top of the rooftop of the media center, which might change the dynamic a little bit, at least for Thursday and Friday, because yesterday was perfect here. Yeah. Tuesday, we're recording this on Wednesday, and it was absolutely spectacular, and it felt like it was a little crusty out there, and maybe a little bit of rain would actually help this golf course.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, I guess, late Friday, you know, guys trying to make the cut. It might get a little more drier by then, so that'll be interesting late in the day as the sun's going down. But I did get out there today, and it was a little, didn't feel like October out there, which was unfortunate. But weekend looks strong, so excited for that.
I think it's going to be perfect. I think sounds like the only rain that they're expecting all week, so the course will be in pretty good shape for the rest of the week. It's going to be in the 70s, so it's not going to be too hot. It's going to be a little windy, so this golf course is going to play more links-like than I think it might have otherwise, and I'm looking forward to an exciting championship.
Yeah, Chris didn't bring a coat or a pullover.
I mean,
it's we're not into the media center.
Left in the car.
I mean, it's six high 65 and rainy day, but luckily this is the worst weather day. The rest of the week's going to be awesome.
Rookie, so you gotta give him
and he is a rookie, that's so true. So we give him a pass, but yeah, I felt bad for him out there. This course is awesome, I gotta say. I mean, it looks brutally tough. I think Sam's right. The softening it up will help a bit. I think we will see some low scores tomorrow that will play into that final. You know, everybody wants to know what the final score is going to be. I think we'll see some low ones tomorrow. I mean, you know, maybe some 66s or so.
I don't know.
I do.
66 looks might really be hard. Low.
No,
it's going to be
I think
so
we'll
windy.
See a few. I think, okay. Yeah, but you know, the wind, it's not crazy. For here, it's not crazy wind, but I agree. Even on a calm day here, it's like a club wind. It's like a 10 to 15 mile an hour wind that seems to always be going around. But this place is awesome. I don't know, Ryan, obviously we keep asking you because you played it, but, you know, just looking around for me, it looks like the first hole looks like pretty easy, a nice little starting hole. But then once you get to two, it's a monstrous par three. And then from there, the rest of the course looks brutal.
No, definitely. And if you're going off 10, you know, they did a split teaser.
Right,
so if you're going off 10 and 11 with any kind of wind, welcome to Shinnecock Hills.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be tough out there. No, I think the golf course is in really, really good condition. I think, as we've talked about in other podcasts before, you know, the widening of the fairways here is going to be just enough where I think you're going to get some guys willing to hit drivers out there. So you're going to see some guys trying to attack some of these holes. The added length, however, isn't really going to be overwhelming. We heard a lot of guys talk this week in the press conferences, Rory McIlroy specifically. Hey, you know what? It's not that long out there, all things considered. And so I think it's going to be strategic on when they do use it. But I think you're going to see enough players using it that it's going to be kind of an exciting tournament from that standpoint.
This is an interesting year, and this was not intentional when they, you know, decided to have the Open at Shinnecock after having an Erin Hills, because you have an Open last year in Erin Hills where sort of the criticism was it was a little too easy, golf course a little too wide. It was not a traditional U.S. Open. So the instinct would be, okay, let's get back to a traditional U.S. Open, make it really tough. However, we're coming back to Shinnecock where in 2004 they went overboard in making it a U.S. Open course. So I think, you know, not knowing exactly what they're thinking, I think the USGA is sensitive to proving that this is a viable venue without being sort of tricked up or goofy. So they're going to have to walk that line while still kind of protecting par as best they can and making it look like it's a tough test.
I think, like Ryan said too, the wind will be a big factor. I think that was kind of the problem last year. They were expecting a ton of wind and kind of never came. And this year it looks like at least 10 miles an hour or more each day. So that, I mean, Alex and I were standing on 16 today, the par five, and with the rain and the wind coming in, there's guys leaving their drive in the bunker.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was, we were both shocked.
It didn't,
Stenson,
yeah.
Might have been Stenson and then the two other guys. They couldn't even clear. I mean, you can go right to the bunker and you'll be okay.
Yep.
And it's a three shot par five. But if you take on that bunker and come up short, you're hitting a pitching wedge out, so you know, into the wind on a lot of these holes will make them even longer than they are.
Yeah, and just in general, I mean, because there's so few trees, these holes look so long. I mean, from the tee, 11, the par 3, you're looking uphill, and it's such a small target, and it looks like it's a 250-yard shot, but it's only like 190 yards, but it just seems like it's the whole, you know, course, I think, is a little visually intimidating, I think.
Where I think they're going to have the potential to have people second guess or question course setup will be which tee boxes they select, because you guys talked about 16. I mean, yeah, they can go all the way back on 16 and make it a 600 and, you know, 30, 40-yard hole, but if the wind's going to come into their faces, they're not going to do that. And so they have to make a lot of calls early. That's where this year, compared to 2004, I think they're going to be exposed to some criticism if they haven't picked the right tees and suddenly some of these holes play really more difficult than the players had anticipated.
Well, it's funny because obviously the seventh hole was the hole that always gets referenced to, you know, and it gives people have different opinions of it. And Jeff Shackelford, who, you know, big architect guy, he doesn't like the seventh hole.
It's
the worst hole on the course. I went out there yesterday. I was like, wow, this is what a beautiful hole. But I see his point, and you kind of heard it today with some of the comments from Rory and Ricky Fowler. They didn't say they didn't like the hole, but they both said it's a really small window you have to land it in. One of them said a 7-yard window. The other one said a 10x10. And that's what Jeff was saying. Like a real Redan hole, you're supposed to have a lot of room to run it up and whatever. And these guys, if you miss it, comes way down the hill.
Right.
And if you go a little long, it's gone. So, I don't know. What do you guys think about that hole?
Well, I think, you know, as long as it's a 7 or 8 window where if you hit it perfectly or hit it well, you're going to be rewarded. I think that's fine. That's good. I mean, obviously, when we talk about 2004, it's been, you know, talked to death already. The problem is the guys were hitting good shots and they weren't even holding at that point. So, my point is, you know, if there's ever a hole where they need to make sure that they're erring on the side of rewarding good shots, it's that hole. I mean, it's fine if there's a you know, a narrower, it's a hard word to say, by the way, narrower window than most. But you have to give them something, because at that point it becomes just farcical.
So my question is for you guys who now seen the course and seen the new setup and whatnot here, do you feel like now, are there any players in play that you wouldn't have thought of beforehand, you know, at a traditional, you know, really narrow U.S. Open course? Or I'm curious if your selection for the winner here this week has changed at all by actually walking around and seeing what the course is set up like.
It hasn't for me. I'm still going with Justin Rose. I just saw actually his odds now have gone even further down to 12-1. So he's almost caught DJ as the favorite. But the one guy who I, you know, and you guys are going to be shocked to hear this, I'm liking Tiger's chances less and less. I really am.
Less and less.
Wow. Because just the knee-high stuff that is about 5 yards or so off the fairway is going to be a problem for him.
It's so wide. Don't you think that, you know, the holes that are really narrow, he's just not going to hit driver?
Well, but that's the next thing. I think he's not going to hit driver, and I think that's going to put him at a big disadvantage to these other guys who are hitting driver.
I think
he's going to be too conservative. I think this rain has softened up. I think the first 2 days are going to be there for scoring. You got to get some low scores. You got to play aggressive. I'm worried with, you know, everything in his head swirling every time he pulls up the driver. I think he's going to hit those irons. I think he's going to, you know, post a couple decent scores the first 2 days and be too far off the pack going into the weekend.
I thought it was interesting. Ted Scott, Bubba Watson's caddy, tweeted something earlier in the week. He said there's no question that a long hitter is going to win this week.
Right.
He's just looking at the setup, looking, you know, kind of what type of player it favors. I just think a lot of guys who are hitting their driver relatively straight and get it down there are going to be have a huge advantage. Like, I was watching Gary Woodland. You'd never think of Gary Woodland as the type of player who could really compete for a U.S. Open. Now you're like, wow, maybe if the guy's got a halfway decent short game, he can kind of get it down there. He's the type of guy who can contend.
There's another long hitter that's been playing real well that now I think more and more I'm really looking at him as Dustin Johnson. I mean, he's been playing so solid the last few weeks, and I know I got a lot of heat for picking a chalk pick to win last week at the Memphis tournament, but maybe he's chalk this week because he's world number one, but he's playing so well, and I feel like the golf course is now really set up well for him.
Then you got to think about Tony Finau, who showed up at the Masters, so he's obviously got some major championship experience under his belt. Hits the ball a long way, so you got
to... He hasn't hurt his ankle yet.
Yeah, there was no part three contest yet.
The ankle seems to be intact, so... Tony Finau.
Potential backboarding opportunities?
I don't know. We'll see.
Should we do 45 minutes on backboarding?
We definitely could. I know, because you and I differ a little on this whole thing. But as we both talked, I mean, we're not going to see it this week. We got the USGA.
But that's one of the other problems with it. There's no way it's going to happen this week, so why is it okay? Obviously, it's a major championship.
On the director's cut of the podcast, you'll get the long version of this debate here.
We're going to have a special episode backboarding next year backstopping.
Everyone's going to be running to their ball this week.
Backboarding.
Did I say backstopping?
Backstopping.
Waterboarding?
Official term. Yeah.
So if there's no new player on your head, is there a player now that you guys have seen... Or after seeing a golf course that you go, wait a second, I don't think this guy's got a shot anymore. You were saying, for instance, you think it, Sam, you were thinking that it would be a long hitter or whatnot. Is there now, for instance, Justin Rose, not necessarily a long hitter per se. Curious if there's anybody now that you go, wait a second now, in hindsight, maybe we don't pick him.
I don't know. I mean, I guess by simple deduction, you could say, okay, who are the guys who are not the longest hitters on the tour and who, as a result, might be at a disadvantage this week? But there's no one who jumps out at me like, yeah, never mind. I mean, of course, it always goes back to there could be a guy who just has an exceptional putting week and exceptional, iron week, and it kind of makes up the difference. But there's just certain guys who you're going to go into the week and they're going to have a decided advantage on every hole.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I already said Tiger. I wouldn't be surprised if he contends, but again, I just think he's going to put himself in too deep a hole. I guess, Jim Furyk, he's got no chance.
Yeah, there you go. Way to go on a limb. Kenny Perry, while you're at
Kenny
it.
Kenny Perry, no chance this week. Zach Johnson, sorry, buddy.
I don't know, Jim Furyk, the U.S. Open.
Stop it.
I
mean, no chance. We just talked about it. You need the length. Obviously today has been kind of a washout, bad weather. The most exciting thing was Sam spilling once again on his computer. Not even noticing it, by the way. But what did you... Of these first few days, what was your biggest revelation, moment that stood out, maybe in a presser or whatnot, for any of you guys from what you've seen or heard?
Mine was that Jordan Spieth really didn't
know
that the playoff was no longer 18 holes but 2 holes. And at first when I wasn't in the press conference, but I'm reading the transcript after hearing you guys talk about it. And I'm like, okay, no, he was just joking at first. And then you really realize, no, he was not joking.
Yeah.
He did not know this had happened. How? There's a 3-time major champion who's won this event.
And he's a pretty cerebral guy, too.
Right. Well, we always praise him for that. Yeah.
The best case scenario in that whole situation.
I mean, his sponsor's AT&T. They give you updates on things, right?
If Jordan Spieth, holes a putt to tie for the lead after 72 holes, and then gets in his car. Like, okay, see you guys tomorrow. Okay, what time is tea time? Goes out to dinner.
Yeah. It's like Donovan McNabb when he didn't know.
Tries to find Curtis Strange, we're doing the interview. Yeah.
Donovan McNabb thought that you could, there was a second overtime. Yeah, and the game ended in a tie.
Spieth and McNabb.
That was crazy.
The same.
What about, I think Dustin Johnson's quote about not thinking during his swing.
Not thinking in the midst of his swing. Somebody asked him in a press conference what his thoughts are while he's in the midst of his swing. And Dustin, in his own proverbial fashion, I don't think about anything, And you know what? When you watch him walk around the golf course, he just looks so loose that he probably doesn't think about anything. He just plays. And you know what? There's something to be said about a guy who just plays.
Especially on a week like this. I mean, a week like this when you can sort of uncomplicate your thoughts. I mean, obviously, the guy's a smart enough golfer to know, where to play away from, where to not hit driver, things like that. But in terms of overcomplicating the game and not having a lot of self-doubt, which I'm sure some certain guys have in moments, in big moments, he seems like he doesn't struggle with that at all.
Yeah. Traffic's been a big part too, and it's not just the media guys bitching and moaning. It's the players. I mean, Matt Fitzpatrick saying he went 45 minutes to go 0.1 miles, and the USGA has now actually warned these guys about reminded them be, you know, allow for extra time to get here to the course. You know, is it possible that we see someone miss the time? I mean, I joked about it a few days ago, but now it's like, it actually seems like a possibility.
I don't think so. It would be the morning people, obviously, if it was going to be anybody. And I think given, obviously, the horror stories that have come across, I think everybody's going to be very mindful of their tea times and give themselves a very wide berth, to the point even where, you know, I don't know. I don't see that as being an issue, but you never know. What if a truck pulls over on Monday?
Yeah.
Here's a better question. Where is the line drawn for police escorts? Like, if you're top 50 in the world, you get a police escort to the golf course?
But, I saw a few on the way this morning. Yeah. At least two go past me,
That could happen. But, well, also, though, let's say you do allow for crazy traffic and you get here 5 hours before your tea time. Maybe that throws off a guy. I don't know. I mean, maybe
we're... I hear the food's good in the clubhouse.
It's probably better than in here. That's true. But although, well, the Klondike bars are...
Find a spot to nap in the locker room or something.
You know, obviously, we've talked about some of these favorite guys. You know, we've said, does the course favor this guy or that guy? Who's a guy who's not getting enough attention this week, do you think?
How about the world number one? Or the former world, the former world number one. The recently deposed world
Justin
number
Thomas.
One. Yes.
Is the Justin Thomas era over?
Phase one might be. Yeah.
He had it.
Yeah,
for years.
To an extent. I mean, it's hard. It's like a weird week so far. I mean, I feel like, and we've talked about this before on the podcast, about, you know, the presence of Tiger in any field sort of sucks some oxygen away from everyone else. So normally here's a guy who won a major championship last year. Yep. He's obviously recently number one. And you would think he would be one of those guys that people would be really excited. He shot 65 here last summer. Obviously, it was a much different golf course, so it feels like he's the type of guy who would be getting a lot of attention. I haven't really heard much about him at all.
Do you think it made a big difference for some reason that he's not number one, even though he's number two? You know what I mean? If you arrive at a tournament at a major and you're number one, do you get talked about more? And now that Dustin's back at number one,
It was such a you know, exclamation point. Yeah. Reclaiming number one and winning by six shots.
Right.
And it almost sort of, to some extent, sort of pushed some of the other guys into the background.
Yeah.
A guy no one's talking about, which is the case basically every time he tees it up, is Reed, Masters champion.
Yes! That was my next guy. Yeah.
Just like kind of lurking right now.
That's a good point.
Yeah, you're right.
He's in the field, but
he's playing.
Yeah. Oh, that's good for him. Good for him. Yeah, you're right. Justin Thomas, the reigning PGA champ. Patrick Reed, the reigning Masters.
I do think Rahm is kind of like
Rahm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you're right. There hasn't been a whole lot. Yeah. I'd say that.
There haven't been. Well, I think part of it too is Sam hit it. You know, obviously Tiger gets so much of the attention. Phil gets much of the attention every U.S. Open week, and then, you know, there's like 15 guys now that are at the top that you could really make a case for any of them almost. I mean, we already talked about Justin Rose. We've mentioned Ricky, Rory. I mean, you go on, Jason Day. You go on and on. There's just so many.
How many times did Ricky, in fact, say he was ready to go?
Rested and ready to go. Right. That's just seven. He's rested and ready to go. So look out. Ricky, you know, obviously the engagement, he was asked about it. He didn't clearly want to talk about it too much. He said there wasn't much of a plan that went into it. He just had to get rid of the ring, which, you know, for us three, Pat, Chris, you're getting to that point. When you do it, when you get the ring, you do want to kind of get it over with. But
did I tell you guys the story of when I actually went to go buy my ring? I accidentally ran into my mother in town, and she was asking what I was doing, and I had to explain to her what was going on. Long story. Sorry about that.
Did she know that you were about to do this?
She wasn't quite aware until that glasses.
That's interesting. But I wonder, does that do anything for him? I mean, I would think it helps that he has it out of the way this week. But is he now not focused? We haven't seen him the last 2 days. Mm-hmm. Or not the last, he was here today, but he wasn't here Monday. Tuesday he was playing.
I will
in the
say
area.
That was the biggest takeaway. I actually just wrote a little bit something about it. Was all these guys were playing.
Yeah,
places,
talk about your fun village,
playing places other than Shinnecock, which, you know, it's two pronged. One is obviously, this is the location of maybe the best golf courses in the world outside of, you know, Monterey Peninsula.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's just extraordinary. So that's one. Two, everyone talks about how U.S. Open practice rounds are deadly. They're so long.
Yeah.
So these guys all get here, you know, like Ricky played Thursday and Sunday, and then smartly spends the really busy days practicing somewhere else. So, so many guys. Rory had done that, played Garden City, Friars Head, National. I saw Kuchar was at Friars Head. I think all these guys are getting into that habit. So
for most of them, though, they'd already been to Shinnecock at some point, so they know the course well enough where it makes sense. Like Justin Johnson said that he'd never been out here until Monday, so I wouldn't see him necessarily going to some other place and whatnot.
Right.
But you're amazing. Right. I think that is pretty...
That's amazing that Justin Johnson hadn't come out here once in a scouting... I mean, you know, that kind... Again, we talked about it. It fits the mold. Yeah. He's loose. He comes in. He's so talented. He could do it. It doesn't matter for him. If anything, that an extra trip might get into his head. But that blows my mind. Jason Day also said he hadn't seen the course till Sunday ever. So that I don't know. I guess so. We don't think that makes a difference in preparation. I mean,
I think you need to know a little bit about the golf course to be able to be strategic on how you're going to play it. But I don't think you need to play it 4, 5, 6 times. You can probably do that in a couple rounds. I mean, for a professional golfer who knows what they're looking for, I think they can do it in a couple rounds.
The thing to me that was interesting was just watching guys on the chipping area, practice area, is like seeing how balls release, like that kind of thing, because that's where it really comes to play. I mean, most of these guys are obviously smart enough and have enough, you know, in their yardage books to know, okay, I have 185 to the front, I want to be on the right side of the screen, whatever those type of kind of larger picture strategy. But the little things like, you know, you can't play a shot that's going to spin to the front of that green because the ball doesn't spin there. Those type, like the ball doesn't release. Like those type of little intricacies of greens, I think a lot of that can be achieved on practice greens and chipping greens, just seeing how balls behave. And I feel like this week, more than any other week, that's where it comes into play in a big way.
We did mention the final score. What do you guys think will be the final score after seeing this course for a couple days? How's it going to turn out?
I think even par.
Wow. Yeah,
I think this is going to play harder than people think. And maybe Thursday's a little soft, but I think it's going to be windy, and I think things are going to dry out. And by the time Sunday comes around, I think even par would be a good score.
I think it's going to be like 500 or 600, and my reason is going back to what I said earlier, which is that I think the USGA is too sensitive to make, and I think the modern tour player is too good a golfer to have even par be a winning score on a major championship. They're just too good these days. So the only way they can achieve that on a course like this is to trick it up a little bit, and I think the USGA doesn't want to do that.
Yeah, I like low under par, 3-4 under par, and only a couple guys similar to a Pinehurst where Keimer was 10 under, but it was like he and two other people were under par, or an Oakmont. DJ got to 5, and there was a couple guys that won. So I like low under par and only a couple people under par.
Yeah, I agree. I think 3 or 4 does it. I think people don't realize that Retief Goosen was 4 under in 2004.
Right, they think of it was a total chop
massacre because everybody shot 80 the final day.
Until the final day, it was horrible.
Right, so I think something similar to that. What of what you've seen? What's your favorite hole on the course, or what do you think will be a pivotal hole during the tournament?
I'm fascinated with the 11th hole.
You love the 11th hole.
I love the 11th hole.
That's Ricky's favorite hole.
It's Ricky's favorite hole. Well, Ricky and I were both born on the same day, December 13th.
Oh, anyway. Right.
Same year?
Not same year. No. I'm going to AARP a lot earlier than he is. So, but I like the 11th hole because I think, different than the 7th hole, in that it's a short hole, but it has a small green, and so many bad things can happen if you don't hit that small green. And it's going to be a point in people's rounds over the weekend where you've just played the 10th hole, which is a very difficult, long golf hole, and then you think you're going to get a breather in this par 3, and you don't get it. And you can make a big number there. And I've seen there's these two deep front bunkers in the front, and I've seen a lot of people leave the ball in those bunkers when they're trying to hit the shots out. And so I just think that I'm intrigued by that hole. I like the 16th hole, too. I'll be very curious how they do set it up on this final day, whether they're going to allow players to try to really go for it and maybe make an eagle and maybe have a little bit of a run going into the stretch. But those are my two favorite holes.
I was going to say 16, and the reason is because 17 and 18 are so difficult. Yeah. So, like, really your last chance of making any type of move, if you're coming from behind, it's going to be on 16. I mean, and Phil, I was there
in
04.
I know, real chance. But,
so, you know, he made birdie on 16. He had a lead. And then he goes 17, makes double bogey, and it was just like the wind came out, or the air came out of the entire golf course. So I feel like if they, and I hope, going back to my earlier point, they make 16 a scoreable hole, so they move the tee up, because otherwise it's just like, you know, you're holding on to, you know, and just gasping for air towards the end.
That was the hole on Monday that Phil said they kind of took a birdie opportunity away, right? So, yeah, like you guys
said, lengthened it. I mean, it's 616 yards.
But they can
now
adjust that tee. I mean,
right. Yeah. Like we saw before, I mean, they were off the back, and wow. I mean, a bunker that, I'm telling you, it looked like it was not even 240 out there. Right. They couldn't clear it.
Straight into the wind today. Which
get into the wind.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
I do like that 14th hole. 14 fun too. It looks like you have to play a draw.
Yep.
And then if you overcook it, you're kind of dead over there. You know, that kid Humphrey was hitting an iron, which is just...
that's nuts. But, yeah.
And then the green kind of funnels in with the bunkers on each side. Mm-hmm. It looks like a fun hole.
I actually like 7. I wouldn't like to play it after I've heard a little bit more about it, but I think it just looks so cool. Mm-hmm.
Go long, not short on 7. You can chip back up.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Go long, but not short. But after talking again to Jeff Shackelford, who's obviously a lot more educated on course architecture than I, he is worried that it will be even more of a farce than it was in 2004. Because he says that the rough that they actually had there helped in 2004. Mm-hmm. They cut it down now.
Right.
So balls are going to be running like crazy
right
off now. And that's made the window even smaller. And it'll make, you know, when you miss the green, the next shot even tougher and everything else. So I think, I hope that he's, you know, exaggerating
he's
a little.
Honest, right.
You know, I'd love seeing a difficult hole, but I don't want it to be stupid, obviously. And again, I already mentioned the second hole at par 3. I mean, wow, that's going to be tough. That is going to be a tough hole. What'd you do?
I parred that one.
That's amazing.
That was one of the two holes I parred.
What tee? What was the yardage?
It was 200 something.
Okay. 200? Okay.
7-9?
Stocky.
Yeah. You want to talk about what did you talk about with Sergio?
Yeah, so I was going to say, well, you know, we've talked about experience here and everything else. I mean, one of those guys who was there in 2004, he was in contention.
Who hasn't been talked about.
Exactly. He's one of my 40-1 odds. Sergio Garcia, I think he's mm-hmm. under the radar as well. A fellow new dad like myself, we chatted 15 minutes the other day in the city. We talked about Shinnecock. We talked about the final round. We talked about changing diapers. We talked about his life without the green jacket. So it was great to talk to Sergio ahead of this year's major. And again, he's kind of an under-the-radar guy. So please have a listen to our talk with Sergio Garcia. From the Adidas flagship store in Midtown Manhattan, I'm excited to welcome Sergio Garcia to the Golf Digest podcast. Sergio, how you doing? Thanks for coming on.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, we start with a different major than the Masters, which obviously you won last year. The U.S. Open is this week in nearby Shinnecock Hills. And I'm wondering, from what you've seen so far this week, if you have seen so far, how is it different from 2004?
Well, I've heard. I haven't seen it yet. I'm looking forward to see it tomorrow. But I've heard that the course is... You know, there's added some new tees, a little bit longer, but at the same time, it's a little bit wider, a little bit greener than it used to that it was in 2004. So, I'm excited to see how it's playing. Obviously, Shinnecock is one of my favorite courses. I think it's an amazing test. So, I'm sure it's going to be another amazing U.S. Open there.
Can playing in a tournament that long ago help this year at all with experience?
A little bit, but still, you know, not that much. Mm-hmm. Because it's 14 years ago. Right. So, we've played so many rounds in other places that I do remember a couple of things in there. But also the course was playing, was extremely dry, mm-hmm. and it was, you know, rock hard. And, you know, the greens, you could barely, like, put the club down, the putter down, and keep it steady. You know, it was, like, no friction on them. So, I don't think it'd probably get to that extreme.
Right.
So it will be playing a little bit different, but we'll take a couple good looks and we'll be ready.
Yeah, you mentioned the conditions. Obviously, so much was made about the USGA and maybe crossing the line. What do you remember about that final round and that seventh hole? Obviously, it was tough for everybody. But you still say you love that course, so you must have gotten over it on some level, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. I do. I said it. I've always said it's one of my favorite courses. It's one of those things. You know, the weather was really good. It was warm and a little bit breezy, and it got kind of a little bit baked. And yeah, I remember the seventh hole, pretty much no one could hold a green, even hitting a good shot. So that's a little bit unfortunate.
Right.
It happens. But I know that the USGA realized that they, mm-hmm. you know, they kind of let it go a little bit too much. So I do have to say that since, you know, a few years ago,
sure.
they've been doing a much better job in setting up the courses in a way that they're challenging. They're just still tough, but they're playable.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and you can... You know, if you play well, you can shoot 5, 6, 7 under, and if you don't play well, you're still going to struggle.
You know, obviously last year, Aaron Hills, the winning score was 16 under. That's kind of an anomaly at the U.S. Open. For your chances, what's better, if it's a score like that or something more traditional, closer to even par?
I would say probably closer to par. That's more the kind of championship I like.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, you know, obviously. Without going over the limit, but I think you know when it plays a little bit harder, you know you can rely on your long game a little bit more. You don't feel like you have to, you know, make as many putts as maybe if, you know if you have to shoot 14, 15, 16
right,
under.
Right. You're listed in Vegas right now, 40-1 odds. To me, I feel like you're not getting enough respect. Do you pay attention to that at all? Does it matter? Do you care?
I didn't even know.
Yeah, okay. So you don't keep trying.
Nah, that would tell you. No, I think that at the end of the day, that doesn't really mean mm-hmm. that much because you know you can have a guy that is playing great, and you know maybe it'll be I don't know whatever 5-1 odds or 7-1 odds,
sure.
And then all of a sudden he finishes 40th, and then someone that is 60-1 then goes and wins. So it's all kind of, you know, a little bit up there, and you know, obviously Vegas and the bookmakers and everything, they have to make their odds and stuff. But you know, it doesn't mean that, you know, I don't have a chance.
Right,
like
right. well, regardless of how you play this week, you have increased your streak of playing in major championships. It's up to 76.
Thank you.
Began at 1999 at Carnoustie. I know that was a missed cut, but you're 19. Could you have imagined back then that you would play in every major at this point since then?
No, not really. For various reasons. I mean, obviously you think and you hope that you're going to be good enough, but at the same time, it's a mix not only of playing well for a lot of years, but staying healthy,
mm-hmm.
Because you can miss some majors because of injury, even if you're qualified for them. So I've been lucky with both of those things. So we're just hoping to keep that streak going as long as possible.
Yeah, you know, Phil said something apparently today about how quickly the years have flown by. Can you believe that? I mean, this is your 20th year, I guess, as a professional golfer. I mean, can you believe that?
It's amazing. No, it's funny. Many times we look back and we talk about it and we think, you know, we feel like 6 or 7 years ago it was 99.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it turns out it's 20 seasons ago.
Right.
So it does go quickly. I guess that's a good thing because it means that you usually when time goes quick, it means that you're enjoying mm-hmm. it and you're doing what you love. So in that aspect, we're happy and we're lucky. It has gone quick.
Was there one major that you almost didn't tee it up for in that span, maybe because of an injury or maybe because of world ranking or something? Was there whatever got close?
Yeah, there was two of them. Funny enough, I was talking to a friend about it last week. It was, I think it was 2011, end of 2010, I kind of fell off the top 50 in the world, and I wasn't in the US Open, so I had to play the only time I played a qualifying for a major.
Mm-hmm.
So I played actually played one for the British Open earlier that year, but I had an injury in one of my hands and I couldn't finish. I pulled out after 6 or 7 holes. But then I played the qualifying for the US Open at Congressional, and I managed to get in a playoff and ended up finishing 6th at Congressional, and then I played well. I think it was the week after at the BMW. I finished 2nd, and that got me into the British Open that I wasn't in there because of the ranking too. So those were the two that really I was closest to missed, and but fortunately I didn't.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, not too many injuries. It's been great.
Yeah.
Obviously, speaking of long-term things, you have a long-term relationship with Adidas. You know, what has that meant through kind of the ups and downs, and how special is an event like this today?
Yeah, it's extremely special to do an event not only with Adidas, which, you know, we're coming up 20 years together, which is something unbelievable. It's something that, you know, I feel so honored to be a part of such an amazing company like Adidas is. But to do it in New York City, you know, one of the biggest and nicest cities in the world, so it's you know, it's really exciting, and you know, that's why we're all making the effort to be here.
Sure. Obviously, Adidas also big in both tennis and soccer, or sorry, football. what of those two sports as a secondary sport for you? Which are you better at, and what would you give your handicap ranking wise? How would you rate yourself in those two sports?
Yeah, I would love someone else to rate myself on those. I don't know. I love both of them. Mm-hmm. I played both of them as a kid, and mm-hmm. I still do. I still play nowadays. I would say I'm probably a little bit better at soccer than at tennis.
Okay.
But similar levels. I mean, I have good friends that are tennis players, like Juan Carlos Ferrero and mm-hmm. Marty Fish and James Blake and obviously Rafa mm-hmm. And stuff, and they reckon like Marty is quite tough with these things, and he always tells me that I'm probably around a scratch
tennis,
maybe one handicap
wow.
Tennis player. So that's
and you're better at soccer.
That's quite nice, and
maybe
about the same level.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I've always enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I've been. I guess I've been lucky and fortunate that, you know, I seem to kind of do things fairly easily, mm-hmm. you know, so.
Well, Marty's pretty good at golf, obviously.
Yes, no, he's same thing, you know, yeah. He's great hand-eye coordination, he's really good at, obviously he's a great tennis player, but
sure.
He's good at everything, like he grabs a ball and starts shooting baskets and he's good and he throws it great. So he's just a great athlete.
You were recently in Ukraine to see Real Madrid win Champions League final. Will you go to Russia for the World Cup to see Spain?
Fortunately, I was there. Yeah, it was great. A friend of ours invited us to go watch. And we were there a couple of years earlier in Milan too. But unfortunately, I don't think we'll be able to.
It's a long trip.
It's it's a tough time of the year for us because, you know, I'm playing after this week. We go to Germany for the BMW. Then we play the French Open in Le Golf National. And then we have 2 weeks off where, you know, it's difficult to go all the way to Russia to watch maybe one game or two and then
right.
come back and have to get ready for the British Open. So it's unfortunately, we'll probably make a quick 1 or 2 day visit to Wimbledon and then kind of keep practicing.
Well, obviously winning your first major last year, I assume changed your life, but having the first kid, I assume changed it a little more. How's it been going for about 3 months in?
It definitely did. changing. I mean, like having a girl, having a little baby definitely changed my life, you know, automatically as soon as it happened. It's been great. It's been great fun. It's a lot of work, but at the same time, it's so, how do you say, like, it gives you so much back.
Right.
So it's been an amazing ride. She's a great mm-hmm. baby. I have to say we're very lucky in that aspect so far. So, you know, we've enjoyed it.
I'm lucky as well. My wife had our baby 3 days after yours, and I've gotten great at things like doing diapers. I wonder, is there something that a dad skill that you've kind of picked up in the last 3 months that you're particularly proud of?
Yeah, I mean, I love changing diapers. I've changed a
it's
lot.
Not that bad.
I think, yeah, and also, I mean, if you realize it, those first, I mean, you know too, those first few months, that's pretty much the biggest thing we can do, because, you know, when it comes down to feeding, it's mostly the mom and things like that. Like, I love putting her to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she kind of falls asleep on my chest, and, yeah, and then I put her in the crib and or the pack and play, and you know, so I love doing that, and I enjoy changing that. it's good fun.
Well, she's adorable. I wonder who came up with the name, you or Angela?
We both talk about it.
Okay.
It was a little bit of her idea, but then we looked at things that kind of really kind of
meant something to you guys.
Like got our eye, got our attention.
Sure.
We wanted to be something related to Augusta, and what better than the azaleas, you know, that are beautiful flowers, and they're, you know, they're so iconic there at Augusta.
So obviously azalea is your new addition. You did have to give back your green jacket, though.
Unfortunately.
Exactly. I wonder, now it's been a couple of months, how is life without it? Do you wake up dreaming about it? Are you grasping for it in the middle of the night?
No.
Yeah.
No. It's fine. Obviously, if I still had it, it would be amazing, because that would have meant that I would defend my title. But no, it's okay. You kind of move along. I think having azalea,
yeah,
also kind of takes your mind off,
right,
it. So it keeps you busy. But to be able to go around the world with a green jacket was an amazing experience.
Well, thanks, Sergio. Good luck this week. While you're in New York, do you have any exciting plans? I know you went to Hamilton a couple years ago, so you already did that. You checked that off.
I doubt we will. You know, it's still a bit of a long drive back and forth from the Hamptons to here, and it's going to be a busy week.
Sure. Well, good luck. Thank you so much, Sergio.
Thanks again to Sergio Garcia for joining us, and you know, guys, let's kind of want to get some final thoughts from all of you as we head into this second major. What's, you know, the thing that's on your mind as we head into Thursday's first round, right?
Well, I'm confident that the USJ is going to have this thing set up where it's going to be not a farce, not a comical thing, but a difficult test.
Yeah.
And that's why I think even Parr is going to win, and that's why I think you need to be the world number one to win. I'm going with Dustin Johnson. I'm confident of that.
Cool. Okay.
Well, like you said, you know, the best players will probably rise to the top. So I'm looking forward to an awesome, you know, Saturday, Sunday leaderboard. And I do like Jon Rahm for sure.
Ooh,
you know, showed some stones at the Masters. Didn't show us much in the majors last year, besides his temper a little bit.
Right.
But another year of experience under his belt, and good showing at the Masters. I like, and he's kind of coming in under the radar. Played well at Colonial, but I like Rahm.
Yeah, I'm kind of with Ryan, and then I'm excited for this golf course to kind of be seen at its best, and I feel like both the weather and the setup are going to allow that to happen. And I hope so, because it's a really spectacular venue. I mean, obviously, logistics aside, it's a really cool place, and it's like one of those places where I guarantee all of us who are bitching and moaning about getting out here every day, the people who are going to watch it on TV are going to think it's amazing.
Oh, yeah.
So that's all that matters, really. So that's the first part. As far as who wins, I don't know. I mean, I it seems like the guys who have a little bit of a length advantage are going to be competitive. You know, as for who I would pick, you know, I would take any of those kind of five or six top hitters. I would say they have a chance. So that's
just pick
one.
Pick one. Come on. Please.
I don't know. Doesn't have a tee time on the sheet.
I don't know.
I mean,
so, I'm just trying to be. I want to be. If I say something, it's not that exciting. But if I leave it kind of mysterious, that sounds smart.
No, it's not.
No.
No. You got to say someone.
All right. Well, if I say Tiger, then I can say I was the only guy who picked Tiger on our podcast.
Tiger.
All right,
there
so I'm picking Tiger to win.
Tiger Woods.
I'm not actually picking Tiger. Okay. So.
I agree with all you guys. You know, I'd never been out here before this week. This place is spectacular. I'm so excited to see what happens here. I'm really excited. I think the players are to be back here, which just shows you how great of a course it is, because you would think, even Sergio calls it one of his favorite courses, and that's despite shooting that 80 in you know, the final round in 2004 and being part of that carnage. You know, these guys realized that was a setup issue, not a course issue. It just seems like it's going to be a great test of golf. I'm hoping to see, you know, these guys struggle a little, but I'm hoping to see a great champion. And that great champion will be Justin Rose for the second time at a U.S. Open. I just think he's playing the most consistent golf of anyone out there. And I think he's got the length. I think, surprisingly, he's 10th in strokes gained putting this year. Not known as a great putter, but he's putting probably as good as he ever has. So I'm sticking with my guy, Justin Rose, and I think he's going to get it done.
And, all right, beautiful.
And that's it. All right. Well, we're excited. It's been a busy few days here as we lead up to the tournament. Thanks again to Sergio Garcia for joining us. Thanks to all you guys for joining us, and thanks for listening to us. Please subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts if you haven't done so already, and check back later in the week when we give a little rundown of how the tournament's unfolding.